This is Mary Tomich.
Matt Enders.
Welcome to the Sunday morning Linux Review, episode 96.
What a surprise.
I thought it was, it's a surprise.
Whatever. All
something
right. Surprise.
Yeah, we're surprised.
It's actually working. That's
yes.
A surprise.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, obviously it's Matt and Mary this morning.
Matt and Mary, with all the built-in technical difficulties that entails.
That are inherent to a Matt and Mary run show. Yes. But we're happy to say that we believe we've overcome our adversity. And we have got, I think, some interesting things this morning.
I hope so.
Tony will be contributing from the chat room.
No, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone.
He's gone. He said he only had 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And I said, we don't need your ass anyway. Go away.
Go away. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll go ahead and just move on then. So, Matt, how'd things go this week for you?
Nothing outrageous. Mm-hmm. I did an rsync last night, and it went 100% smoothly.
Yeah. Well, good.
I remade InitRD before I took the sync server down. Mm-hmm. So then when I shut it down and I moved the drives over and booted it back up, it just all worked.
Oh, fantastic. So. That's good. That's good. So... Boy, when things go fine there, it's just a fast update from you.
Yes, it is.
All right, well, I had some fun stuff happen to me this week.
And what was that, man?
Well, you know, I've spoken a couple times about the fact that I'm providing tech support for a city council campaign, and my candidate came and she made the cut. So she came in second.
So that means she gets to run in the real election.
She gets to, yes.
And the reason that they take the first and the second finisher is because in the city of Detroit, they don't have a Republican Party. Only Democrats run ever.
No, there are Republicans. They just don't win.
No, they don't run.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's. I think if you want to run in the city, you have to change your party affiliation. I'm not sure, but anyway, it's just kind of how it is. It's no different really than Utah, I guess. You know, Utah's only Republicans win.
But they have Democrat candidates that also run.
But they're kind of foolish to run.
This is the only place I've ever lived in the United States. Mm-hmm. Where the Republicans don't even run. It's one party, period.
It's a one-party system.
It is.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, no, the Democrats tend to predominate.
Is this a one-party system here in Detroit?
Well, yeah, I mean...
Is that what you're saying? Are you really going to take that stand?
No, I'm not disputing it at all. So we'll move on, though. So that was exciting. That took up half my week because, you know, the primary is on Tuesday. And then... what else do they do? That's Matt's knee. No.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my mic set. It keeps drifting down.
Yeah. No, but that was the main thing I did. So it kind of took up part of my week. And now the rubber hits the road. And the candidate said, oh, we've got to do this all over again. Well, kind of. I mean, it's
right.
A slightly different focus. So.
It's for all the marbles this time.
Exactly. So we're going to knock off an incumbent, which is a tall task. Okay.
Well, isn't this the first year that the Detroit City Council is being elected by district?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
So your incumbent actually happened to live in that district, or did they relocate to live
in that district? She's lived in there for 25 years.
Oh, okay.
So because I don't live in her district.
The vast majority of the Detroit City Council came out of, like, just two small pockets of the city.
Of little more affluent, neighborhoods,
yeah.
Yes.
Like Rosedale Park area.
Yep.
And
Sherwood Forest.
And Sherwood Forest, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. And then the write-in candidate won.
Yes.
That was kind of really...
Yeah, I think that was good on Detroit. That he won.
Yeah, I voted for him.
He's the best candidate.
Mm-hmm.
It was
turnaround guy.
Mm-hmm. He'll do good things. It was not. It was an underhanded move the way they kept him off the ballot. I thought.
Well, you know, justice prevailed. I guess.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, enough of our local
politics.
Political shenanigans. Anyway, so for me, and then I did decide to put together a brief review, and I did spend the latter part of the week doing that, so we'll be talking about that when we get to that part in the show. And I took a look at, as part of it, I took a look at King Office. I don't know if you've heard of that.
That's
So I've got a few comments about that little office suite.
All right. So I guess it's on to the Kernel News?
It is.
All right. We had a release candidate on Sunday, the 4th of August, 2013, at 14:09 Pacific Daylight Time. Linus Torvalds released 3.11-RC4, and this is what he had to say about it. It's that time of the week again. You apply 339 patches. Oh, wait a minute. I got the tune wrong. You apply 339 patches, and what do you get? Another week older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. That Linus quoted that song in his...
with the musical the musical rendition by Matt Enders.
And it was, for those of you that don't recognize it, it was to 16 tons, and I totally butchered it. So,
well, yeah, we noticed.
Right. And it says, I had hoped things would start calming down, but RC4 is pretty much exactly the same size as RC3 was. That said, the patches seem a bit more spread out and less interesting, which is a good thing. Boring is good. Let's keep it that way and try to make for fewer patches for RC5, okay? Because we are just halfway now, and I really want to see just fixes. We've got some architectural updates, ARM, Parsec, but most of this is drivers, mostly networking, USB, and some DRM updates. There's also some core networking changes, and the print K code movement looks big if you don't do git renames, i.e., like the patches I upload. And that's it. That's Linus Torvalds. On to the stable updates. None.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Kernel developer quote of the week comes from Greg Crowhartman. He says, what's worse than having a coworker call your cell phone and have it wake you up because you are halfway around the world and it's the middle of the night? Having them do it again the next day, same exact time, both times not leaving a message. Guess it really wasn't that important. There's got to be an option on stock Android to block specific numbers, right? I can't seem to find it anywhere.
There is. I've done it. I've blocked it. For some reason, you know.
He's making a joke.
Oh, right. Well, there is. There's a way to do it.
And that's the kernel update.
Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, let's see. We're moving on to
the distro scene.
Yeah, we are. Let's see, what do we got this week as far as distros go? I have to tell you,
FreeNAS. Did we do FreeNAS last week?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Then we're starting with Zental? No, that's
That was last week.
No, it's a development.
It was there. IP Fire, that's correct. Yep. So.
And it couldn't have been because it's 8.6. Last week was 8.4 on Sunday.
Okay. That sounds good. let me just explain. We're set up a little differently than we normally do. I'm trying to, the computer I normally use has been pressed into service.
Yes, her normal computer, her regular workstation laptop, is doing our Google Hangout.
So
it's sitting over across the way there.
Which was a last-minute decision, so I have nothing installed on this thing that I really need, So I'm trying to. So what I'm trying to do is bring up some of the sites and things. That's why I'm fumbling around over here.
What about this one? She's got two other laptops in front of her.
This one here,
one of her running PCBSD and another one running some Linux distro.
Some old distro, but the problem is remember this one doesn't have the wireless wireless
drivers. I think you ran a network cable.
I did, and I didn't get a chance to get back to this to check it. So it's like I have one computer for each hand.
Yeah.
And it hasn't helped the productivity, though.
No, it has not.
Anyway. All right, well, I guess what we'll do then is go ahead and take a look at some of the things for this week. And I think you started off with what, Matt?
You normally do the reading and I do color, so it's IP Fire's What's Up, though.
Oh, all right. Let's go down there. Okay, well, IP Fire 2.3 Core 71 was released on August 7th, 2013. Now, according to the information that were in the release notes, it's the latest stable release of the hardened firewall distribution, and it offers corporate-level network protection. And they've got, of course, you know, with the release are the standard types of updates. One thing they've got, Matt, is they included something called JWhois, and they said it was a much more flexible. It was much more flexible and does not have an outdated database like the old one.
Instead of talking next to your mic, it would be better if you talked into your
I have two computers.
I know, but you just have to be aware.
Yeah, no, it's like this, right? There you go.
In, like this.
In.
If you want to mark that time.
I'm not editing. I can't edit this week. I edited last
Well, then
time.
We're getting a raw show, so let's go.
All right. All right. So, but anyway, just getting back to this J who is. So I go to the site just to because I was kind of curious about this particular utility, and they said J who is looking for a maintainer. So they put it in there because of some updated database stuff, and then you go to the site and it's they're looking for a maintainer. So I don't know if they found one, but they haven't put that information out there on the site. So.
Well, all right.
Okay.
And they did fork originally from IPCOP.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of trivia there.
Yep, I remember we talked about that. Yeah. All right, next up, we have got, that was released, you've got it on your screen. Yes. I think you ought to go with it, Matt.
All right.
I'll provide the color.
It's a leading community distribution from China featuring the DeepIn desktop environment based on GNOME Shell. Linux DeepIn 12.12.1 was announced as an enhancement.
Yes, and when they say GNOME Shell, they mean a customized GNOME Shell because it they've done a very nice job with this, and that, as a matter of fact, is a distro that I took a look at this past week. And included in it is the King Office Suite that I think we touched on earlier.
So we'll be hearing more about DeepIn later.
Yes,
excellent. Next up, we have Sparky Linux 3.0 Game Over Edition, a lightweight, fast, and simple Linux distribution designed for both old and new computers. Has been released. Game Over is built on Sparky Linux 3.0 and compatible with the testing branch of Debian GNU Linux.
Yeah, you may recall that they just released something, a couple weeks ago, I think.
Yes, recently.
Yes, and apparently they had a significant installer bug that prevented, did not let you install on USB disks. And did not show any disk if the USB disk was connected to the computer. So they had to fix that pretty quickly and then re-release. So that's why this came out right on the tail of that. So, but that was a big issue.
All right. And then next up on 8.8, we have GNuSense 3.0. Sam Garat has announced the third major release of GNuSense, a Debian-based Linux distribution, but strictly from fully free software. The stable release of GNuSense 3.0 is a fact, with the help of GNU Linux Libre and various other people helping to check and hack on freedom issues. We've been able to produce a new major version that aligns with the Free Software Foundation's freedom guidelines.
Yeah, they've... I don't know if we've ever really seen them on our... You know, previous distro.
We have not
at all. So they don't release that often. So good for them.
New baby.
Well, no, I think they've been around for a while, but they release. It's almost like Debian. They don't.
This is the first time I've ever seen them on the front page. So.
Oh, okay. It's been a while. All right, and what do we have next? We've got is Porteus coming up.
We have one. Yes.
Okay. And I only know that because I've got some notes
okay.
here.
And next up, on 8.9, we have Porteus. The standard desktop edition of Porteus 2.1, a Slackware-based mini distribution with a choice of multiple desktops, has been released along with the kiosk edition.
Mm-hmm.
Major additions since 2.0 release include restructuring our layout to have a standard ISOs for 5 desktop environments, KDE 4, Razer QT, Mate XFCE, and LXDE, and adding optional prepackaged modules for Google Chrome, Opera, and LibreOffice, and Abbey Word.
Yeah, and I reviewed them, I think, probably 2 or 3 months ago. One nice thing about that particular distro is that they use, you mentioned modules, and they contain all the you know the various things that the program needs. It's a again it's not like your typical Linux distro. It's one of those that has them all self-contained within there. So pretty nice. I liked it as I recall, but it's not as friendly I think for installing on hard drives as it is for just the portability of it. I think is its big plus. So
So, yep. And then next up on 8-9 also, we have Tails 0.20, a Debian-based live system focusing on internet privacy and anonymity. With the NSA around, you might need that a little more. And it has been released. Tails, the Amnesiac Incognito Live System, version 0.20, is out. All users must upgrade as soon as possible. This release fixes numerous security issues. New features. Install Linux kernel 3.10.3-1 from Debian Unstable, IceWeasel 17.0.8, and Tor browser patches. Yeah, the Tor browser patches. Do you know why they needed to patch Tor browser?
I forgot.
Running an old version of the Tor browser was an old version of Firefox, and the NSA
had supplied the patches.
No, got a bug. Put out an attack. Now, granted, okay, it was child pornographers, so if they catch them, they catch them. But can you? Throwing people's rights away under any circumstances is not cool, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
But and what they did was they had a website that infected this Tor browser and mm-hmm. made the browser tell you it's the MAC address of the computer and the location of the IP.
Oh,
really? The real IP that it was coming.
Okay.
From, yeah.
Well, no wonder they wanted you to upgrade right away. One of the things they included too on this release is a predictive entry system called Dasher. Now, I went and installed it because I was kind of curious to see how it did its work. And what is really interesting about it is that when you open it up, you've got like the alphabet just kind of there on the right, and then as you can use them. I used a mouse, but you can use any other device. You could use a joystick. You could use, the keyboard, whatever. But it then starts to move other letters by there. And if you start to click letters, it then starts to just narrow it down. And then if you see your word before you're even done, you can click a box. And then there's a text window above it that will place that word in the box that you've selected. I tell you what, there's a vector from your cursor, and it you can really get those letters moving, and somebody might want to take Dramamine if they've got motion sickness, because it really moves around. If you want to have it do that. So anyway.
Well, all right.
Okay.
And we're ready for the top five.
I'm thinking we are, but you know what just got released? Elementary OS just got released.
0.2. It added there at the top of my list.
It did just a few moments ago.
Yeah. Cassidy James has announced the release mm-hmm. of Elementary OS 0.2, codename Luna, a single CD Ubuntu-based distribution featuring a traditional desktop layout, a simplified file manager, and the Midori web browser.
Yeah, and their release announcement is extremely long, but it does have screenshots in there, and the nice thing is that they've got they've worked at putting multiple display support in there. If you haven't already mentioned that, I'll mention it quickly. So that's kind of cool. All right, and I think that's the end of the list for this week, and now it is on to
The top five.
Top five, according to
DistroWatch.
Website's hits per day. So, again, this is purely a number-driven gig. And we know what we'll be seeing on here in just a second. All right. All right, coming in, coming in at number five, we have PC Linux OS. At 1,072.
And trending up.
At number four, we have Manjaro at 1,121.
And trending up.
Well, everybody's upbeat
yes,
this
they
week.
Are.
Not to tip our cards. At number three, we have Ubuntu at 1,483.
And trending up.
At number two, we've got the trusty Debian. And that's at 1937.
And trending up.
And coming in at number one, we've got Mint.
Gotta love the minty goodness.
At 2707.
And trending up.
That's right. I forgot. I'm thinking you say that at the end, but good job, Matt. All right. So we've got that out of the way, and now it is on to my review of the week. And as you heard me say just a little while ago, I took a look at Deepin Linux this week. I wanted to because I've seen it before, and I've seen some screenshots from it, and I was pretty impressed with the way they have taken the Ubuntu based distribution. Actually, it's got a little Debian base to it too, but it used to be called Haiwi, and we'll take a look at the vitals first of all. It's a Chinese based distro. Its latest birthday was this past week. And it's a derivative of Ubuntu with some Debian thrown in there. The kernel is 3.8.0-28, and it uses a modified GNOME shell. Now, Linux Deepin boots to a clean, highly customized GNOME shell desktop. Now, they chose to replace the notifications and everything at the bottom of the screen with, they've got a nice little menu launcher down there. They've got everything that you used to have at the top, you know, when you think about GNOME Shell, is at the bottom. So it has kind of a KDE look to it. I've heard some people in some of the research I did, they also kind of likened it to resembling Windows 7 as far as the kind of that transparent, not the transparency, but you know, that little glossy, arrow look where you can kind of see through
No, I don't use.
Okay, well, I know you don't. Well, I have to at work, but you know how that is. It's a sad tale. But anyway, we'll move on. But both my graphics and my wireless card worked great.
In the chat,
yeah,
Jess has chimed in with he has heard that Deepin is as slow as Continental Drift. Did you notice any slowness?
But I got 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah. On a modern system, it's mm-hmm. going to be perky. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, but I think he raises a good point because it's a you know again it's based on Ubuntu, so it's got a lot of stuff in there. But on my system, I didn't notice anything too slow, but I didn't really stress it either. The defaults, it's got Firefox for its browser, and also it uses Chrome. But the Firefox homepage, it's kind of interesting. They really took it and they put multiple tabs at the top for various Google functions like web images, news, and maps. And they also have got an option to search either Google or Bing. And I thought I thought China had their own search engine, Baidu, but I suspect that it is probably on the Chinese version because you can get Linux Deepin in two languages, English and then traditional and modern Chinese. Now, the mail client is Thunderbird. The office suite, they've got two, actually. They've got King Office, and then they've got LibreOffice. And then the file manager is Files. Let's see. The install process, all I'm going to say here is that Ubuntu install process, standard, solid, safe. It just went through it. I answered the questions, selected my partition. I had no problems at all. And then it was a standard reboot back into Linux Deepin. No real changes to the polished desktop, aside from the fact that the install icons that you had in the live environment were no longer there. So there's been a couple of distros when you do that, they're still there. They're still I think there. A couple of, yeah, but most
annoying.
Of them, yeah,
it's
it is.
Unclean.
Yeah, but these guys, they took care of business. Now, the first order of business, of course, was to update the system. I had 7 packages waiting for upgrade. And I just decided to perform that update from the command line. I just went in there and did an apt-get update and then apt-get upgrade, and so I had no problem at all with that. Linux Deepin has 2 methods for package management. You can use GDebi for packages you've already downloaded, and then they also have the Deepin Software Center, which is patterned closely after Ubuntu Software Center. I tested it and installed Kexi, KDE's database manager, which of course brought down some KDE files and libraries. But again, the install went flawlessly. I had no problem at all. Kexi then automatically appeared in the menu, and that on some distros I've reviewed, that has not happened, where it just automatically appears right after you've installed with no reboot. And although the dependencies too are handled behind the scenes, I know Matt, if you've used a package manager, you've seen a little terminal like window will open and maybe list some things that are also going to have to be installed. That was all handled behind the scenes.
I have never installed any packages graphically.
Okay, well, for anybody who has, just know that Linux Deep End takes all of that and puts it behind the scenes. You don't see it. And for people who maybe are coming from, say, the Windows world or coming from that type of environment, this distro would be perfect for them, quite frankly. But anyway, I'll just continue on here with this. So yeah, the user doesn't see any terminal display. And then the other interesting programs, I want to talk a little bit about King Office. This is a Chinese version of MS Office. It includes three components, Writer, which actually is the same name as LibreOffice's word processing program.
Well, there's only so many, and Microsoft's got Word locked up. So.
Yeah, that's true. And then Spreadsheet, and then Presentation. Now, when you first open the King Office suite, you're greeted with it looks like an embedded web page where you can click on templates or a number of different helpful tools and links that are available to you. But if you close that out, you can then open up a blank document. Now, they have cloned Microsoft's look as far as the menu and ribbon approach. They've got a small black strip across the top with the various menu categories, which then if you click directly below it horizontally will appear the tools that are available in that menu category. So very, very Microsoft Office-like. Now, obviously the theme and that type of thing and the visual, it's not as, I'll say, not as polished as Microsoft's, their Office, but again, it's functionally, it worked just fine. Now, what's interesting is that when you save a document in King Office, it puts it, it uses the .wps extension.
Word perfect.
Well, that's what I thought, but I looked it up, and it's also, I think, was the old Microsoft Works extension.
Oh, really?
Yes, from way back.
Way back in the day.
In the way back machine. But, I was pretty surprised because I thought, wow, that's like WordPerfect to me. And then I went back and looked, but it also is Microsoft Works. So I thought that was, I don't know if there was any significance to that. I didn't have time to really do any digging into it. But, yeah, so the King Office Writer extensions, they also, in addition to WPS, you can also save them in .doc format, but conspicuously absent were .odt for LibreOffice. Exactly, I was very surprised. And then also .docx, which I looked in LibreOffice Writer.
LibreOffice will save in .docx.
Yes, .docx. It's got that option, but not here. But then I was thinking they also have a pro version, and I suspect what they've done is
they've moved that
into the pro version. So if you want to create documents in those formats, you've got to buy the pro version. So, again, I have not confirmed this. I didn't have time to, but that's what I suspect has happened here because it was fairly minimal on that. You know, again, aside from that, the King Office interface certainly is very usable for anybody who's transitioning from Microsoft Office.
Yeah. You know, even if we eventually do wind up killing Windows, which I can't wait for it to happen, I don't think we'll ever kill Office. I think They own that market. They own it.
Yeah. Well, some of the advanced functions that are available in that in Microsoft Office, right. I use some of those, and so I can't replicate some of it.
But you can run Office on Linux. Did you know that? Crossover Office.
Oh, Crossover Office. Sure.
Yeah, you got to buy it, and then you got to buy Office, but you can run it.
But you, I think that their support for Access. Now, I haven't checked recently. Is
I don't know
silver
they
level
because
they do, but they don't have the gold support because you know they have that
tiered.
Yep, so gold for like Word and Excel, and then PowerPoint. But I think Access was not up there at all. And again, it's just because of some of the intricacies behind the scene they haven't completely solved.
But why would you want Access anyway when you could run a real database?
Yeah, well, true. But anyway, the also just a few more things about. Linux Deep End, they've got the launcher that they use is really kind of nice. I mean, it's down there in the corner, but it's a full screen launcher, kind of like Home Run and KDE, for anyone who's ever used that. They've got down the left side of the menu, they've got the various categories for applications. You simply click the category, and then, of course, the screen's going to change just to show you what apps are in that particular category. I was unable to tell if you could change it. I suspect maybe there is an option there, but Linux Deep End also uses CompEase. I opened that up just to check and see what things were in place. I didn't have much time to play around with that, but they have definitely activated that as far as the user experience in that this distro. So my review, excuse me, not my review, but my rating of Linux Deepin, I gave it a 4.
Really? Only a 4?
Well, how many other ones have I given 4s to?
Only a 4, Mary.
Well, it's the highest one I've ever given.
I know. I'm busting your job.
And I'm doing that, but I'm not going to switch to it myself. Linux Deepin is one of the best-looking Linux distros I've seen in a long time. The tweaks they've made to GNOME, as well as the custom apps for music, they've got one called DMusic and then one called DPlayer, place this distro at the top of the heap. And for anyone who is transitioning, say, from Windows, I would say that they would have no problem. A new user would have no problem.
Yeah, but I would shy away from it just because it's made by the Chinese.
Believe me, that was in the back of my head, and I thought, you know, I'm going to run Wireshark and just see what's going on when I'm using this.
See what it's doing.
So I did on my Zarezan laptop, which is pressed into service for the Hangout. What was I going to say about that? I was going to say something about
Wireshark on it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have I've got it installed there, and Deepin is on SDA7 on that laptop. So maybe I'll check that out just to see where any packets are going where they're not supposed to be. But yeah, that would be one thing. So that's Linux Deepin. A very nice distro, and yeah, the only caveat is that. Yeah, who knows what's embedded? But then again, I guess you could probably say that for some distros that are come out of the U.S.
No.
All right.
So. Well, I guess it's on to the.
On to the news?
The news?
Yeah?
I have none.
I've got a very small KDE corner earlier this week. Well, you know, they're going to be releasing KDE 4.11, I think, next week. Were we going to go out for that? We're going
to
go out, Matt.
I thought we were going to go to
Atwater. Our favorite hangout, Atwater. Yeah, yeah, I think I am going to do that.
I'll be there.
All right, let's do that.
Quaffing a few cold ones.
Yeah, fresh beer.
Yeah.
All right.
And anybody in the Detroit metro area,
come join us.
Come join us.
Yep.
At Atwater Brewery on Wednesday.
That's right. Yep.
Next week on Wednesday at what? 7 p.m.
Yeah, I think so. Or yeah, we can do 7 or 6:30. Yeah, 7.
6:30? Can you make 6:30?
Yeah. Yeah, I can.
Okay.
It'd be like 5 o'clock. It'd be tough because I would probably not be done with working.
Right,
but I'm
right.
Pretty sure I'm available on Wednesday. So plan for 6:30.
6:30 it is.
Yep. All right. Cool.
At Water Brewery.
Google. Okay. Yeah. And then drink it.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, well, anyway, I was just mentioning for KDE Corner, though, Caligra 2.7.1 was released this past week, so that's probably good news for those of you who use it.
Use it.
And actually, I was pressed into service.
Who uses it besides the developers, seriously?
I'm using it right now, as a matter of fact. I'm using it on my BSD system right now.
Because you don't have anything else installed.
That's true. All right, I'm busted. Yeah, that's true. I had to, you know, I had to scramble there at the last minute, and then I had a little browser crash, Conquer. You know, I don't have Firefox installed on here either. So, but they got Caligra's got some nice. And we've talked about it a couple weeks ago. How they've got stuff laid out on the right side. I like it.
Yeah, that Lotus Notes-y look.
Yeah, it is. So, and I think that's really. All that I've got.
All that you've got, too? I do have a tooltip.
All right.
I have a toolbox.
All right.
It's a lengthy toolbox.
Okay. So well, we need that.
Get a coffee, get a beer, get whatever you want.
Do you want a beer while I'm while you're reading?
I will take a beer, yes, please.
All right.
Thank you, while I'm reading.
All right.
All right. First up, we have using rsync. Let's learn a little about rsync by breaking this command down. Time, space, rsync, space, dash E, and then single quote, SSH, dash C, ARC4128, dash O, compression equals no, dash A, single quote, dash AVX, dash dash progress, user at server you are getting the data from, colon, remote directory, space, local directory. Let's break that command down. And I'm using this command as my example because this is the one I'm familiar with and I've used more than anything else. So The time command at the beginning is just going to give us a nice little summary at the end to tell us how long it took. It will look something like this. Real, 33 minutes, 1.060 seconds. User, 8 minutes, 27.190 seconds. And system, 5 minutes and 48.056 seconds. And then rsync, this is the main command that's going to synchronize our remote directory with our local one. And then the dash E, this option to rsync lets us choose the remote shell program that rsync will use to make the connection. You need to follow this with the remote shell that you are using. Now, we're going to take a little side trip to explain the remote shell command we are using. In this case, it is SSH with some options, which is why it is enclosed in single quotes. So, SSH-C ARC4128-O compression equals no dash AX. So now, the SSH part is the type of remote shell that we wish to use, and it's a good idea to run rsync in some sort of secure tunnel so that the casual observer cannot steal the data. And then the minus C ARC4, this switch lets us set the type of encryption to use and must be immediately followed by the cipher to use. Through testing, we have discovered that ARC4128 is the fastest. However, ARC4128 may not always be available, and then we'll fall back to Blowfish. But and I realize ARC4128 is not the best encryption, but just for running on rsync, it'll work great. And it is faster. And then the zero, the minus O equals, the minus O compression equals no. The minus O option is used to give options like they were in the config file. It is useful for when there is no direct option for what you want. Here, we are telling it to use no compression. We have found that using compression actually slows the process down because of the time to compress and then uncompress the data. And then we have dash A. The dash A option disables forwarding of the authentication agent connection because you don't want your SSH connection forwarded elsewhere. And if you were doing this on a workstation that runs X, adding the minus X option is also a good idea because this disables forwarding of the X server. Now on with the rsync. The dash AVX. The dash A option is for archive mode. This will keep all of the permissions and attributes of the files intact. And then the dash V option tells it to be verbose. In other words, list all the files as you transfer them. Then we also use the dash X option, which means do not cross file system boundaries. Since rsync works recursively by default, this keeps it from crossing into separate partitions. For example, if you were syncing the root partition and slash var slash user and slash home were separate partitions, it will make the directories matching those names, but it will not descend into them and copy the underlying data. And then dash dash progress. This shows us the progress of the files as they are transferred. If they are all relatively small files, this is not very useful. However, when the files get to be larger in size, it is helpful so you don't think that the process has stalled. If this is not the first time that you have run this, or the way I do for my backups once a year, is I add the dash dash delete option, and then everything that has been deleted in the source location is deleted in the destination location, as rsync does not do this automatically. And then the last part, the user at server you are getting the data from, colon remote directory space local directory, is kind of self-explanatory. It's the server and the directory you want to back up, and then the user you want to do it as, and then the local directory to send the data to. And that's the breakdown on that rsync command. And you can learn more by doing man rsync. It'll have a lot more information in there for you.
Oh. I'm Come kidding. I'm, that was great, Matt. That was very good. I think rsync is, well, I'm not going to say it's one of my favorite commands because I think ls is a very useful command. But rsync, as far as that was a joke. But anyway, rsync is really a fantastic tool.
It's a great tool.
It is. And
versatile.
Yes, because I thought, and as a matter of fact, somebody gave a presentation, and maybe it was me who talked a little bit about it as part of a presentation.
A while ago,
Yeah, maybe it was you. I don't know how I could have thought that I gave it. But anyway, yeah, very, very versatile. So thanks for sharing that information.
No problem. I wrote that up in about 15 minutes this morning.
After hearing about some of your rsync events,
I couldn't find
at
any
work.
News all week mm-hmm. long. Nothing. So I'm like, man, I gotta have something. So mm-hmm. I threw this together really quick.
Yeah, well, nice
and
job.
I hope you all enjoyed it.
I did. So anyway, all right. Well, we are going to move on to.
Oh, and Jess, yes, it will be in the show notes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, very good. Okay, well, I think, are we...
I think we're on to listener feedback.
I think...
We don't have anything else.
I think we are. It's kind of our summer vacation show. Well, that's what we should name it.
summer vacation show. And next week...
But it was... Hey, it may be summer, but it was no vacation.
We gotta talk to Kevin, see if maybe he wants to come next week. Add a third voice, maybe get a little longer show.
Yeah, sure, we can. Sure.
Or not.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I think the main thing, and again, well, you know, was just getting the logistics coordinated and knowing what we're doing.
Knowing what we're doing is a big thing. Big plus.
Yeah, so. Okay.
On to the listener feedback.
Yes. And let me...
I have it right here.
Do you? Okay.
First up, we have Jim Jick. Says, Matt, thanks for your notes on VLC. The normalized settings are useful, although I usually listen to the podcast on my MP3 player. The latest shows have been better, though. Thanks. Well, wait till you get this one, Mike. So,
All right.
Yeah, that's going back a couple of shows when I did a thing that said I told him how to use the VLC options.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And then next up we have from Bryce Hardy. He says, hi, another great episode. And once again, like the music at the end, I guess I'm starting to use your show as essentially a music recommendation site. Would it be possible to get the link and info so I could download it? There's no there in the show notes. Anyway, thanks for the great. And then Tony sent him the link to that, and he replied back, thank you. So.
Okay.
Do you have it up yet, Mary, or should I keep going?
Yeah, well, I think, I'm just trying to log into my little Dropbox account here.
Okay.
pull that down.
Next up, we have Kevin Anthony.
Hey, Matt, before you go any further, did you have a big event this week?
Do I have a big event?
Yeah, did you have a big event this week?
I didn't have any big events, no.
Really?
Really.
Was it your birthday?
I'd rather not say.
Okay. Happy birthday,
yeah.
Matt.
It was my birthday.
All right.
It was my 48th birthday.
That was the surprise.
How did you find out, Mary?
Facebook.
I'm not even on Facebook. Oh, you know what?
Yes, you are.
I didn't delete my account.
Yeah. See, and I don't really use it except for a couple of forums that the only way you can comment is to have a Facebook account. But I got a notification. See, I didn't go into Facebook. I got a notification, and I thought, oh, I'm going to save this because we'll have some fun with it.
Yeah, I didn't. I forgot all about it because I haven't been on that. I haven't been on the Facebook in over a year.
Yeah. I could tell. But anyway, I wanted to mention that.
So.
And anyway, so we've got.
Next up from Kevin Anthony says, hi, Mary, Matt, and Tony. This is in response to Dowdle's reply to me. So if you're listening, Dowdle, he was correct. I do not have a problem with Fedora's installer. I do, however, have a problem with the partition portion of the install. I searched for about 3 hours on Fedora forums and the Fedora documentation. I found a few ideas and gave it another go at installing Fedora 19. Well, I have Fedora 19 installed and it is running very well. I'm still not really sure how I managed to set up the partitions, but I did. After that, it installed like a dream. I have most everything set to my liking and I'm searching for answers to the rest of the bits to finish. and it's still my contention that this is the partition portion of the installer very confusing and very little understandable information about the process. I'm running Fedora for the first time in 7 or 8 years. So, and Kevin, if you're interested, I'm pretty sure Scott Dowdle has this distribution called Montana Linux that he maintains. So if you Google Montana Linux, you'll find that it's just a respin on Fedora, but it's pretty cool. And
did you get the today's from Jensen?
Yes.
Okay.
If you've got it, you can go.
I do have it. yep. And we've got a note from Henson. We got this today, actually, this morning, and he said that Elementary OS, which we also just discovered, just came out with a new version, which suckered me into trying it out. It's beautiful, really, really beautiful. And let me just keep scrolling over here. we'd love to hear your thoughts. Well, I haven't installed it yet, but I'm going to definitely consider that. And then he thanked us for the show. So, but that and this week's Linux Deepin was really pretty nice too, as far as just the eye candy effect. But I'll take a look at Elementary OS very, very soon. And I think, Matt, did we get any others? I think that may have, at least the ones that I was able to snag. I think that's all that I saw. So, all right.
So.
And,
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. It's pretty quick. Actually, we're probably going to finish stronger than we started. And again, that's only because I ended up without my computer.
Yeah.
And
we had all kinds of snafus.
And the mouse doesn't work on this thing, so I had to use a touchpad.
All kinds of snafus.
Yeah, so.
So.
All right, well. You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review, episode 96. It's a surprise.
It's a surprise.
Happy birthday, Matt.
Okay, whatever.
This is Mary Tomich.
Matt Enders saying have a good week. See you next week.